good evening and a happy new year to you. Let's hope we have a prosperous, balanced, successful, joyful 2024. This is going to be an interesting year across the globe. If all the pundits have it right, almost half of the globe by GDP is going to be seeing a change in government. This presents interesting case studies, sandboxes that allow for us to see changes in philosophical frameworks that countries will be guided by going forward. Welcome to Katie Chronicles. I'm Katie. Here at Katie Chronicles, we're interested in creating a balance in the midlife. We're here to share stories, some knowledge and wisdom, clean insights, and where necessary, just hold each other's hands. So today, we are going to be speaking about frameworks. Philosophical frameworks, to be precise. These have been conjured by humanity from time immemorial. And they seem to be an existentialist sort of desire that we have as humans. Having a framework, a repeatable framework that we can utilize to guide ourselves. You know, now and then you'll hear people talking about the decision burden, right? Decision fatigue. Imagine each and every day you have to decide what rules govern how you live your life every single day. I'm sure by the time you get to lunch, you'll be so tired, you'll need a nap. Now, I will present 10 of these frameworks. And really, they are more the common frameworks, specifically in the Anglophone world, with possibly a Western sort of tint bias. And the way that I'm going to present them is in a very synoptic manner, so in summaries. And the summaries are intended really to just give you a sense of what the actual framework or philosophy is, what some of the legs that this framework or philosophy stands on, and just for interest's sake, who are the interesting people who either are foundational in these philosophies or who are practitioners, just so that one can get a clear sense of relatable humans who live according to some of these frameworks. Ostensibly, it obviously, hopefully, allows for one to go and dig a little bit more and find more about these people. Because this is what this channel is about. It's about knowledge. It's about wisdom. Now, some of the knowledge will be shared, but some of it has to be fetched. And hopefully this is a trigger prompt for one to go and fetch whatever is relevant to them, curate and craft it into what is a suitable framework for themselves that they then can, you know, guide their lives with. Now, without further ado, I'm going to start with these frameworks. And I mean, the frameworks themselves are influenced by our cultural, religious, philosophical, and personal beliefs. And they vary, you know, across time, across religions, across age, across geographies. So this, you know, it's like a buffet. You pick what it is that is relevant to you. All that we're trying to do here at KD Chronicles is to name it, present it to you, and then you have the freedom to actually choose which one resonates with you. Now, The first one is mindfulness and present living. Mindfulness and present living actually not too unfamiliar to most of us. You'll hear about people talking about meditation and shutting off your thoughts and making sure that you listen to yourself. I'm a big fan of this, right? The philosophy itself is about embracing the present moment and focusing on the here and now. There is no yesterday, there is no tomorrow, only now. And the approach, the legs that this particular philosophy or framework stands on are mostly mindfulness meditation and the idea of being fully present in your daily experiences and activities and appreciating those particular current experiences. You know, it's almost like an embracing of one's fate. You know, it's a very nice, I think it's Latin or Italian, amore fati, which just says, you know, embrace your fate, love your fate, amore, love your fate. And mindfulness sort of leans in that direction where it just says, be here. You, the version of yourself that is here, must be here. It mustn't be thinking about, oh, what's going to be happening tomorrow? Oh, what happened yesterday? None of those times exist. Now, some of the well-known practitioners, some of them not too well-known to myself either, but there's a John Kabat-Zinn, who's renowned for developing mindfulness-based stress reduction programs, something that definitely must be quite an interesting idea to engage with, because it must have some very powerful ways of getting a person to be present and reducing their stress. The other is a Vietnamese Zen Buddhist monk and a mindfulness teacher by the name of Thich Nhat Hanh. I hopefully did not butcher that gentleman's name, but once again, a reasonably well-known person in the circles of mindfulness and present living. And then the one that I think within the Western contemporary world one would know is Eckhart Tolle, who is the author of The Power of Now and an advocate for living in the present moment. The second one is something that is actually fairly eclectic for me, because before I did this research, I really had heard the name, had heard this, but I'd never engaged with it. You know, it's something as a digression. Alabasterism. Actually, I'm gonna leave that as a little Easter egg and see if one could figure out what that is. Epicureanism. The philosophy itself is about hedonism, to be quite frank and honest. It's about seeking pleasure and avoiding unnecessary pain. You know, it's like emphasizing simple living. It almost seems like it wants to lean into Stoicism, which we'll talk about later, but it really is just more about hedonistic pursuits. And the approach, the legs it stands on, are really personal happiness, the cultivation of meaningful relationships, and enjoying life's pleasures. The underlying key here, however, is all in moderation. Hedonism seems to, or typically has, an endless sort of desire for, you know, pleasure, whereas Epicureanism seeks pleasure but in moderate amounts. The other one that I'm a big fan of is Stoicism. Now, this, many a book have been written about this as well, and in some of these books were written by some fairly important historical figures. Oh, hang on, I think I did jump here. apologies. So if we just go back to Epicureanism, and this word is gonna kill me, the practitioners of this particular area or this particular philosophy, a framework, Epicurus himself, an ancient Greek philosopher and founder of this particular philosophical sort of approach, Lucretius, a Roman poet and philosopher, who wrote in De Rerum Natura, which was a treatise on Epicurean ideas themselves, and then Michel de Montaigne, a Renaissance philosopher known for adopting these particular principles. As you could tell, it's very hard to pronounce this, and it's a very unfamiliar approach. It has its benefits, but yeah, it does seem, for me at the very least, something that is not particularly well known. So coming back to Stoicism, once again, as I'd said earlier, Stoicism is an amazing sort of approach, a philosophical approach, and it's amazing because I found it to be so. It's very difficult to practice. I mean, in one of Seneca's books, one of the practices that was suggested is, yes, you might be living a middle-class life. However, now and then, maybe once a month, go live like a beggar. Put your, back then they would wear sacks. So put on your dirty clothes and go in for a couple of days. Sleep in the streets. Have nothing. So that you won't fear having nothing. So the philosophy itself is about accepting what you can change, focusing on what you control, and cultivating your inner strength. And the legs it stands on are really resilience, self-discipline, and the ability to find quiet in, you know, the face of difficulties, in the face of challenges. And the practitioners themselves, you know, are not necessarily people that one would not be too unfamiliar with. You know, Seneca was a Stoic philosopher and a statesman in ancient Rome. Epictetus, an enslaved Greek Stoic philosopher, who really just spoke to, you're in charge of your life, personal agency. You're the boss of you. That's Epictetus. And then the more successful and well-known practitioner who authored Meditations and was a Roman emperor was Marcus Aurelius. This is a very well-known warrior philosopher who was a super ethical man and whose treatise on you know, the Stoics' view on ethics, the Meditations, seems to be something in the current zeitgeist that most of us will read purely because it gives one a sense of how to be a good person, not to everyone, just to you, and how to not be afraid of yourself or your life. The next one is minimalism. Minimalism, once again, is not an unfamiliar philosophy. You will typically find that you've got, if people talk about feng shui, right? Feng shui is about allowing the energies of your home, your living space, to flow through in a, you know, lovely and an easy kind of way. And one of the pillars that particular discipline of feng shui stands on is minimalism. And it's about simplifying life, being a reductionist. Simplify life and focus on essential things and declutter your physical and mental spaces, just as I said about feng shui. And the approach, the legs it stands on are, it's prioritizing experiences over possessions, embracing intentional living, and reducing the impact of sort of materialism. Now, once again, there will be people here or practitioners that one would not be familiar with and some that one would be familiar with. The two I'm unfamiliar with, who are known as the minimalists because they promote the minimalist lifestyle, it's Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. Marie Kondo, on the other hand, is a very well-known Japanese consultant who organizes stuff. You know, you might have seen her on YouTube or even on linear TV programs where she comes and, you know, packs away somebody's closet in a very nice and neat kind of way. I wish I had her in my life. And then another person that I'm not particularly familiar with, the book itself, I think I might have seen excerpts from it called, the blog rather, might have seen excerpts from it. The blog, Zen Habits. So this Leo Babauta is the creator of this blog, the Zen Habits. And once again, focusing on simplicity and mindfulness. The next one is existentialism. Now, as a small digression, as a normal basic human, one of the things that really it's one of those questions that one has about themselves and their lives, which is, how am I here? Why am I here? What's my purpose? Etc. etc. It's an existentialist question, an existentialist challenge, right? And this existentialist challenge is always quite interesting, because the thing about it is the answer is something that you will not know. Once again, as a person who really borrows from every framework I can get my hands on that makes sense, my view is this planet, this universe, this cosmos, all of creation has existed significantly longer than I've been around. As much as I think I'm awesome and I love myself, I know for a fact that I haven't been around long enough. I have barely the intellectual capacity to understand what all of this is for, what all of this really is driven to. So existentialism makes sense to me because it kind of says, listen, embrace personal responsibility and create your own meaning in this very chaotic universe. You don't live long enough to really figure out all of the marbles the way that they genuinely and truly work. But you can decide. You can find that which resonates with you. And I'm hopeful that, some of these frameworks as presented, as I said earlier, will be a trigger, will be a prompt. Because some of them, I'll speak for myself, they are quite familiar. Some of them have not been named, but I have been living some of the sort of approaches that they encapsulate. And the approach of existentialism is, you know, you reflect on your personal values, choices, and actions, and those define your purpose. That becomes the person that you intentionally intend to be. And the practitioners, Jean-Paul Sartre, reasonably well-known French philosopher and a key figure in this particular framework. Albert Camus, another French philosopher, who's known for his absurdist views. And then Simone de Beauvoir, I think another philosopher, a writer and a feminist, or it's Simone de Beauvoir. Okay, nice. The next one is about holistic living. Now, this particular philosophy is a very interesting one because it, once again, it's one of the few that I borrow from, right? Because it considers the interconnectedness of various lives aspects. So the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual. And the intention here is balance. And I mean, once again, our tagline at KD Chronicles is creating balance in the midlife. So one is looking for that balance, that ability to take all of, or as many of life's keystone sort of aspects, right, and weaving them together and trying to live an integrated life, a life of integrity, wholesomeness, connectedness. And the approach is once again about balance and integrating different facets of life, such as health, relationships, personal development. Now, in further episodes, you'll find that a lot of what we focus on sits in this particular area, and we borrow heavily from some of the other frameworks. But the idea really is to understand and appreciate the interconnectedness of life's aspects and then try and integrate them and create the ability for one to level up, but level up in a very granular way, where you look at each and every one of the individual interconnected life's aspects, and you try and you navigate and magnify each one. So, you know, physical, right? Physical has got to do mostly with health. If one can maximize their health, how does that affect your mental, your emotional, and your spiritual sort of health, for lack of a better word, right? If one maximizes their mental health, their emotional health, their spiritual health, what kind of being does one end up being? And key practitioners in this particular area, once again, involve Eckhart Tolle, which we've spoken about, the well-known Deepak Chopra, whom I've used for meditation programs, etc., and Andrew Well, who once again is an integrative advocate for medicine, and writes about integrative medicine as an author. The next one is the growth mindset. This particular philosophy is a very interesting one because it's not necessarily foundational, right? It's one that is about finding where you are and then finding ways to elevate yourself. It's in the name, growth mindset. And the idea really is to embrace challenges and view failures as opportunities for learning and growth. You know, the proverbial fail fast, fail forward. And the approach is you seek improvement, you learn from experiences, and you cultivate resilience. Once again, that word of resilience, right? And what I'm hoping for as I go through some of these, as you also do your own personal research, is you get to realize that almost all of these frameworks have a thread, right, that kind of goes through them, and a very large focal point of that thread sits on purpose and resilience, but that's for later. And the practitioners in this particular growth mindset space is Carol Dweck, who is obviously well known as a psychologist for her research in the area, Angela Duckworth, a psychologist and author of a book, Gift, and the very well known and illustrious Oprah Winfrey, who is regarded as a media mogul and who is a manifestation, a physical manifestation of continuous growth. The next one, we're doing well, we're on number 8 now, is goal setting and planning. Now, as a philosophy, it really doesn't, to me, cut the mustard. Once again, it's something that is a magnifier. It's an elevator. It takes what is foundational and maximizes it or moves it up, levels it up. And this one is about really setting clear goals, creating plans, and working systematically to achieve the desired outcomes. And it stands on, you know, one, being reductionist, so making sure that you don't have too much on your plate for no good reason, breaking larger goals down into sort of bite-sized chunk, and making sure that you line them up chronologically so that you can have these manageable steps of prioritized tasks. And there is a way, once again, of measuring and regularly reviewing your process, right? So this is the approach. And the practitioners here is a giant man himself, Tony Robbins, who's a well-known motivational speaker and life coach, Brian Tracy, an author of self-help books, specifically on time management and goal setting, and the illustrious Stephen Covey of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. We are getting close. Almost there. Number 9 is, once again, in my view, not necessarily a philosophy per se, but more of a manifestation of a way of being, right? And this one is service and contribution. So philanthropy is a very good example of this. And the philosophy, once again, is you find purpose through helping others and having positive impact in the world. And the approach here is just volunteerism. You know, that's all that you do. You share off yourself and you give off yourself, your time, your resources to the greater community. This also kind of brings me to something that I found very interesting in some of the research I've done in the past, where the idea of how humans live, right, of choices that humans make within their frameworks hinge on, but not limited to, 3 things. One, it's obviously your own happiness, right? Self-interest. So doing things that will make you happy right now. The nihilism or Epicureanism that we spoke about earlier. So I'm happy now, right? The second one is more of the long-term planning, right? So in thinking about how I can persist in the long term and making decisions now that look after you in the long term. Then the third part is actually about service, right? So service and contribution, what we're talking about now. And the idea here is most humans try and marry these 3 things, but they typically don't get it right. You'll typically find someone who's very self-interested and who is keen to look after themselves in the future, right? And those people have a specific way of behaving. You'll find a person who's self-interested, but who's also quite happy to share their time with other people. And you can see how these iterations would work. What's interesting in that is that there are ways these people behave, these sort of caricatures, these archetypes behave. And yeah, actually, this is a good episode to come up with. I will unpack this in a future episode. So, you know, these people who engage in service and contribution, the ones that we know well, right? Mother Teresa, a Catholic nun who worked in sort of, I think, Southeast Asia. Mahatma Gandhi, once again, a leader of the Indian independence movement, who also used to be in South Africa at some point in history and has fairly controversial outcomes. People don't necessarily see him in as positive a light now. But once again, revisionist history can make or unmake a person. And then Bill Gates, once again, a very well-known entrepreneur and philanthropist who's dedicated to global health and education. And then finally, I'm sure if you have been patient enough to listen through all of what I've been saying, you've been wondering, but if all of these frameworks exist and none of them sounds like the more common ones, religion, what's the story? So this, the last one, number 10, is called faith-based living. This is not too unfamiliar. This, most people have, you know, something that leans on sort of some life principles that are grounded in religious or spiritual beliefs, right? So that's sort of the fountain from which faith-based living sprouts from. And the approach is you follow religious teachings, you worship, so you practice by worshiping, and you engage your religious or faith leaders for guidance. And the practitioners are well known. Pope Francis, the Dalai Lama, and Rick Warren, who wrote The Purpose-Driven Life, is a pastor and an author. And once again, this faith-based living is so, so interesting in that it's fairly dominant, right, in the public expression of people's frameworks. The other nine are not as public, maybe barring maybe something like mindfulness and stoicism. They're not as sort of well known. However, if you're like me, you'll probably find that your current framework, whilst it might lean on something that is faith-based, it actually covers or borrows lightly or heavily from all of the frameworks that have been mentioned. And you might actually want to ask why I started by talking about frameworks. Because frameworks are about habits. Remember what I said earlier. Frameworks intentionally get you to think about how to do things, how to live your life, how to perform in a robust and repeatable way, so that you can eliminate or minimize decision fatigue. You don't have to keep remembering. It's almost like muscle memory for your mind or your spirit, or all of the above. It's muscle memory for the entire integrated human that you are, right? And going forward, we would like at KD Chronicles to unpack, you know, the frameworks themselves even further, and ostensibly share our own framework with regards to how we see the world, how we then convert that into bite-sized ways of managing the world, and then those bite-sized ways of seeing or managing the world, taking those and amplifying them, right? So that we can create of ourselves a leveling up, a bigger capacity, you know, making ourselves go from a 2-liter engine to a V12 engine. And then, ostensibly, with your permission, then be able to suggest ways for you to grow your current activities to match up with your new V12 capacity. Thank you for listening. I hope we will see each other again and share some of these ideas, because we are here to share stories, knowledge and wisdom, clean insights, and where necessary, just hold each other's hands.